Welcome to Tales from Flat Space, a podcast of science fiction and fantasy by yours truly, Gina A. Pond. Just know that the stories in this podcast may contain content that could be disturbing to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. So, The Four Keys is my first long form stories, and it was a story I had in my head for a long time, and the spirits that I work with, you know, because I am Wiccan, wanted the story written, and so I wrote it for them. It starts with a poem that my wife wrote, a poem called The Sword, and this came to her while we were on vacation, and because we wanted to kind of have some way of understanding power and gender and magic that wasn't gendered. So it starts with a poem called The Sword. Teach me, Kalima, what is my purpose? You are a sword. Swords can cut. Swords can cleave. Swords can divide. Swords can block. Swords can control. Swords can lead. Swords can command. Yet swords can never help. If I were not a sword, what might I be? You might be a shield. Shields can protect. Shields can reflect. Shields can return force as like unto its source. Yet shields can never help. You might be a cup. For cups are the repository of power. They hold strength and space for others, never for themselves. Cups can never help. You might be a flower. For flowers carry beauty and truth, and thus they illuminate the worlds. Yet they can never help. Who then, teacher, can truly help? Only thyself, child, only thyself. The great tree and the crossroads. The four gods sat on the stones near the crossroads. It was intimidating. I mean, it's not every day when the deities you work with decide that they want to tell you their stories. But here they were, and here I was. I answered their call to come here, but it still felt strange to think they wanted me to do this. I took my place on the fifth stone at the crossroads and said, "So, who wants to go first?" They all laughed. "Oh, no," Hecate said. "It's not going to be that simple. We won't just hand you our stories like a piece of bread. You didn't think we'd call you here just to do an interview." I looked around at them. They were staring at me in a way that a teacher does when they know that the student already knows the answer. No, I suppose not. Hecate smiled. Good girl. So, you need to tell people about the crossroads first. Why? We all have choices to make, although Jesus has had more experience of choice than the rest of us. Jesus laughed a bit from his side of the circle. But regardless, all of you, and all of us, always come to the crossroads first. The soul always has a choice. But where do I start? Start at the crossroads and work your way out, she said. All right. She handed me a large bag. Take this with you. It will have all you need to help you on your journey. Thank you, I said as I took it, stood up, and went back to the crossroads proper. The roads that come into the crossroads are large and wide. In the center is a large tree. Many people call this the Tree of Life, but really it has many names. All I know is that it connects this world with all the other worlds that exist. Approaching the tree, I heard cawing coming from its branches. I looked up. The canopy was massive with dark green leaves, and the trunk looked like tangled roots. Up close, I could see that it was really a bunch of different types of tree trunks all twisted together. There were massive roots at the bottom of the tree, and some parts of the bottom of the tree looked like cave openings. Every time I came here, this tree filled me with awe. Sometimes I like to just sit in its roots and feel the life from it. But today is different. It's my starting point. I heard cawing again and a rustling of leaves from above. The cawing became chatter, and I could feel that the crows in the tree were as curious about me as I was about them. Well, hello, friends. You might as well come down here and talk to me instead of gossiping about me way up there. A cawing laughter erupted from the canopy. Well said, well said. We will come. I took a seat on one of the roots, and three large crows emerged from the canopy, alighting on a root across from me. They tilted their heads sideways to get a better look at me, as if trying to see into my heart. Oh, said the first crow. We hear you have come to write the stories of the crossroads. How wonderful! What have you written? Do you have a pen? I like pens. The second crow let out a loud caw. You can't have her pen till she's done with it. Humans use those things to write. How can she write if you have her pen? The first crow dipped its head as if pouting. Oh, but it's so shiny! I looked down at my hands and realized I had taken out a paper and pen without thinking about it. Well, I can't give you this one because since I'm going to use it, but I can look in my bag and see if I have another. At this, the first crow cheered up again, so I opened the bag and stuck my hand in. The bag held all sorts of writing implements, notebooks, pens, quills and ink, fountain pens, pencils, loose paper, tablets, and even a laptop. I gave silent thanks to the gods for their generosity. I pulled out a pen that was similar to the one I had in my hands, stood, and put it on the root next to the first crow. He cawed with excitement, took the pen in its beak, and flew back up to the canopy. The second crow, Kral, laughed. You'll have to forgive him. He's young and easily amused. That's all right. The pen makes him happy, so I don't mind giving it to him. We heard a great deal of cawing from high up in the branches, and I smiled. No doubt the young crow was already bragging about the nice woman who gave him a shiny pen. The other two crows looked at me again, so I asked, Would either of you like something? I have a lot of things in this bag. Oh, no, we're not that young, said the second crow. The third crow let out a derisive caw. You're the one who called us down here. What do you want? Well, can you tell me about the crossroads and this tree? Both crows tilted their heads and said, The tree has always been here. The second crow said, So have the crossroads. The third crow cawed. Wrong question, silly human. The first crow dropped out of the upper branches and landed beside my feet. Stingy! I will tell her our story. She gave me a shiny, so I will give her a story. Oh, sure. Coddle the human just so you can get more shinies, said the third crow. The first crow tilted his head. That's not true. She gave me a shiny even when I didn't ask. So I will give her stories. I like her. The second crow laughed. Well, human, looks like our youngster here has claimed you. I hope he guides you well. And with a caw, he flew back up into the canopy. The third crow cocked his head, gave one last look at the crow at my feet, and flew off as well. So, do you have a name? I asked. Crow. Don't you have your own name? I mean, there's more than one of you. No, we are all crow. He cocked his head and looked at me quizzically. I shrugged. He opened his beak, fluffed his wings, and hopped around a little. Crow, crow, we are all crow. Shiny head, shiny wing, shiny nest with shiny things, the blackbird sang. I clapped my hands and laughed. No matter what world they are in, crows do like to show off. Crow hopped around a little more, then, as suddenly as he started chanting, he stopped, folded in his wings and turning an eye back on me. So, Crow says, you wish to know how the tree came to be and how the roads came to the tree? It's an old story, you know. Older than me. Older than you. Some say even older than the gods. Really? Oh, yes. But the crows know the story. We don't tell humans very often. Not sure why. Maybe the elders can say. I thought for a second. Well, maybe it's because there aren't many humans that actually ask or give shinies for the telling. Crow cawed. Yes, yes. So now I will tell you. I pulled out my pen and opened my notebook. How the Great Tree Came to Be. Crow began to speak. Long, long ago, when everything began, it was very dark, darker than my wings. So dark you couldn't even see any shinies because there weren't even any shinies to be had. I would have been very sad without shinies. Anyway, all the things were dark. All the possible things that could be were just waiting in the dark. One day, there came a light, and all the things wondered what it could be. Was it something to eat? Was it something to love? Or was it something to fear? All the things were very comfortable in the dark, you see, because it was nice, like a nest. But the light started to get bigger, and a voice came through the light saying, Come out, my children, I have many things for you to do. But the things were comfortable and didn't want to come out. So the being in the light gave a long cry, and suddenly the light was everywhere. All the things could see that they were different people and plants and water and trees, and all the things were annoyed because now they had light all the time. Some things got sick after a while, too, because of so much light and no darkness. No one knew what to do, so when everyone came together, they decided it was up to the birds to figure out how to talk to the being that gave us light, because they were able to fly high in the sky, closest to them. Some of the bigger birds said that they would try because they were big and strong and could fly the highest. But their strength was not enough to bring the Lightbringer, and they fell back to the ground. Then some birds with loud voices tried to call out to the Lightbringer, but they ran out of voice. Then the crows got together and hatched a plan. All the crows would fly at the same time with their black wings, which back then looked more like the darkness than they do now, and make it look like the darkness had come back for all the beings. They convinced the other animals to cry out underneath them, as if they were happy that the darkness had come back. Everyone thought it was a good plan, and so all the crows flew high in the sky, blocking out the light for those below. And the others didn't have to pretend to be happy. The darkness felt much better after all that never-ending light. The crows flew and flew, and finally the being that gave us light came back to see what was going on. One of us, the eldest crow, spoke to it. "The other beings wanted the darkness back because you let it be light all the time. You left us to get sick." The eldest crow told some of the other crows to move, and the being could see the sick trees and the parched land and animals. It said, "Oh, my children, I am so sorry for neglecting you so. I did not realize that you needed to spend time in darkness in order to refresh yourselves. I will fix this." Again, the being that gave us light gave a cry, and out of their fingers came the sun and the moon, which they set in the sky. The Lightbringer set the earth and moon to spin around so that the sun did not stay still in the sky. That was the first sunrise and first moonrise, and all the things in the world were happy. The crows were quite pleased with themselves. They would tell the story of how they saved the world over and over to anyone who would listen. After a while, though, many of the other beings got tired of hearing them speak, especially the trees. Crows spent a good deal of time in trees. We ate plants then, not everything like we do now. The trees got tired of us using them like a restaurant. So the elder tree called out to the being who gave us light again. She called and called and called, and finally the being came. It said, "Elder tree, what is wrong? Why do you keep calling for me?" "Being who gave us light, you need to do something about these crows. They keep eating all my leaves and continuously tell their stupid story about how they saved us all." "Ah," the being said, "I understand how that could be annoying, but they did save you all." The elder tree shook her branches. "I don't care. They're annoying to me and I want them gone." The being who gave us light then made their first judgment among all the things. "Very well, here's what I will do. First, I will take the crow's ability to speak in the mortal world away, so that any time they feel like they have something important to say, they will only caw instead. Then I will make them want to eat everything so that they don't eat all of your leaves. And last, I will make them seek out shiny things so that they won't stay in tree branches all the time." And as the being spoke the words, it all became true. The elder crow was quite mad about this and cawed at the being really loudly. The elder tree thought she had won, but the being raised its hand. Elder crow fell silent. "Second, elder tree, since you seem to forget the good deed that the crows did for you and all beings, I will put you in a place between this world and my world, for there will soon be more beings who will need a place to travel to after their mortal lives end. You will hold the boundaries between this world and the other world. New worlds will come from your roots as time passes, and I will send the eldest crow and his family to live with you there, where they will still be able to talk. You will give shelter and food to all who come under your branches, and you will give homes to the crows who will live with you." And so it was that the great elder tree and the elder crows came to live between the worlds, and that is why I can tell you this story here. "So the great tree came first?" I asked, writing the last of what Crow said. "Oh, yes. She does get annoyed with us from time to time, but she remembers what the being told her long ago." "So the being that gave us light created this place between the worlds, then?" "Yes. But what about the crossroads?" Crow cocked his head and then looked past where I was sitting. There was a rustling of cloth, and a woman's voice said, "I think I can tell you this one. It is, after all, my story." I turned and saw Hecate. I welcomed her, and she found a comfortable root to sit on. Crow seemed to be a little wary of her, and decided to sit next to me. Adjusting her robes as she sat, she said, "Ah, I take it that Crow has told you how the tree came to be?" I nodded. "Good, well, let us begin." The building of the crossroads. Hecate speaks. "I am older than many of the gods in your world. Your writers and historians say I was part of the Olympians and the Titans, but I'm actually much older. Those of us who are in charge of the underworlds and the worlds between are usually far older than humans assume, because time moves differently here. Do you not love this tree? She is a great old tree, and if you listen to her, she will tell you many stories about this world and your world. This tree is one of my oldest friends." "Ah, forgive an old woman her rambling. I came to tell you about how the crossroads came to be, and I should be getting on with that, should I not? As I said, time moves differently here, so I may seem to be slow sometimes. You humans have such short and fast lives, it's hard to remember that you just don't have the time. So after the great tree came into being, but before you humans had names for me, the world was still in flux, both in the mundane world, as you call it, and in this place. It was a time where this world between was just forming, so the directions weren't even acknowledged, nor were the elements. So it was that I traveled the realms. I watched as your most ancient ancestors started to speak to one another and travel to different lands. It was during this time when the first spirit workers started coming to this place and started to give it form. First was the prairie, for that is where your ancestors came from, the grass-swept plains and deserts. It is very much as you see it now, vast and wide and empty. Some would find the great tree and talk to her, and then they would show their students the way to the great tree, which created the first paths here. I was fascinated by these paths because I had never seen a path or a road before. As the number of humans increased, the paths became wider. I started spending more time here to meet those who came. Some were spirit workers traveling the old paths, but as more of you came along, there were those who were of the dead who had somehow made their way to this place instead of moving on. They would find themselves at the tree, or however they saw it, since by then the stories of the great tree had either been forgotten or changed, lost and confused. I felt called to help these lost souls. I began to greet them when they came to the tree and to help them move on. But not all of the lost made it to the tree. They wandered the plains, moving neither forward nor back. But once the human population came to a point where roads were possible and people started calling on the elements of earth, air, fire, and water, it seemed that something new was needed. I consulted with the great tree and we devised a plan. The eldest tree agreed to be the center, and from her I gathered all the stray paths and created the great roads you see now. One road came from the north, which is the first direction that people moved to after the ice receded. The second direction people moved to was south. These directions became the directions of utility and necessity. The third direction was east, where people traveled to find out where the sun came from in the mornings. The last direction was west, and not many became curious about where the sun went at night until much later. These two directions became the directions of death and rebirth. And so the roads came together here at the great tree. For a time, when people came, they could follow the roads from anywhere and eventually make it here to the great tree, where I could lead them to the next world. When I came here, I would light my torch so that the lost souls would know someone was waiting for them. But some of them, strangely enough, did not want to move on. Some of them were content to stay here in this existence. Sometimes it would be because they would want to teach the spirit workers who traveled here. But sometimes they would just be content to live in this world. This is how the four great cities came to be. Each city has its own teachings, and the spirits go to where they are called to be. The West, however, has both a city and a gateway. It is where I lead those who wish to move on, and is where I send spirit workers to learn about their own death. I wasn't the only one to come and care for the souls who came to the crossroads. There are several of us who care for the souls that come here. We have been given many names, and we all get mistaken for each other. But for you to know me as Hecate is fine. Oh, and the great tree loves the crossroads. She loves it when beings come to her. She took her chastisement to heart, and now all who come to her will find shelter in her roots and branches. Crow and I sat for a long time before we realized that Hecate had finished speaking. Time seemed to stretch as she spoke, and the story captivated both of us. Hecate smiled and stood up. "Well, friends, I suppose now that you know how the crossroads came to be, it is time for you to go and see the cities." "Yes, yes," said Crow, as he jumped around. "I want to see the cities. I bet there will be shinies there." "I'm sure there will be, and much wisdom, too." She looked at me as she said this, then reached into her robes and pulled out a set of keys. They were long, old-fashioned keys with a round head and a cut square of metal at each end. Each key was a different color, yellow, red, blue, and black. The metal sparkled like jewels. "These keys would lead you to each city and allow you to pass through their gates. This also shows the denizens of each city that you are under my and my siblings' protection, since, like all cities made up of many beings, it is not always safe." "Thank you," I said, "for the story, the keys, and..." Hecate held up a hand. "You can thank me for all of that later. Off you go." She spun around, turned into a great raven, and flew away. "Oh my," said Crow wistfully. "She's beautiful." "She wasn't beautiful before?" I asked. He cocked his head. "Well, she looked like a human before. Then she looked like me, with black wings. They are the shiniest wings I ever saw." I thought about teasing him a bit, but thought better of it. I packed up my notebook and pen into my bag and then stood up. "Which direction do we go in first?" I thought. I looked at the keys in my hand, and the black key started to pull me to the north. "Well, little friend, it looks like we're going to the north first." The crow cawed and flew to sit on my shoulder. I turned to the north road and started walking. The Northern City. The path from the tree was smooth and even as Crow and I walked along. I began to think that maybe this journey wouldn't be so hard after all. Crow would leap from my shoulder now and again to fly ahead, then come back. When he came back, I'd asked if he'd seen the city, and he would say no. When I got tired, I took us off the path to rest. The grass was green, springy, and comfortable to sit on, so I laid down. Crow hopped on top of me. "What are you doing?" I asked. "I will protect you while you sleep," he cawed. "All right. Thank you, Crow." He cocked his head at me, giving a series of caws that sounded like laughter. I smiled. I took the keys in my hand and looked at the black key. It was almost as if as black as Crow's feathers, but it had a peculiar sheen that didn't look anything else I had ever seen. What was I to do with this? We hadn't made it to the city yet, which seemed odd, given that time and distance didn't work like the mundane world here. I took the black key off the chain and put the rest of them in my pocket. There must be a trick to this, I thought. Crow fluffed his feathers over his feet, bringing his wings to settle himself down. His head began to droop as he nodded off. It made me smile. Crows were adorable when they slept. I looked at the key in my hand again, sighed, and spread out my hands on the ground beneath me. I wish I knew how to find the Northern City, I thought, and closed my eyes. Suddenly, the ground beneath us began to suck us in. I wrapped my arms around Crow as he was startled awake. "Hold on, Crow. I think we just found the entrance to the Northern City." He let out a frightened caw as we sank into the earth. Clutching Crow to my chest, the earth swallowed us up as if we were falling through water. I thought, as we kept sinking, that there had to be something protecting us, and I had to trust that the denizens of the Northern City wouldn't want their guests, or future residents, to feel unwelcome in or terrified of their city. I breathed out and tried to keep calm. Crow, however, wasn't doing well. "Are you okay, Crow?" "No," he said, laying as flat as a crow could against my chest. "Don't worry, Crow. I've got you. I'm sure the people of the North are making sure that we can get there safely." Crow twitched his head back and forth, fretting. "I'm afraid. No sky. Not right." I petted Crow's head as we sank deeper. "It's okay, little friend. I don't think we'll be away from the sky too long. There may even be some places for you to fly if they have caves and such." I looked into his eye, which I could barely see. He was still afraid, but he also snuggled closer and flatter against my chest. I prayed that we didn't have to move through the earth much longer. After sinking for what seemed like hours, the earth around us opened up into a large cave. Suddenly we were falling. I let go of Crow so that he could fly into the cave. I hope that crow had enough room. He disappeared into the darkness. I couldn't see much except for a faint light below me. I started to panic. What if I fell on a rock? I could break all my bones. It was hard to trust in the wisdom of the gods who had sent me on this path when you're not sure if you're going to die or not. Below me, I heard a loud caw, and my descent slowed considerably. I landed on a pile of old leaves and moss. I stayed still for a moment to assure myself that I wasn't falling anymore, then took a few deep breaths. Crow came and sat on my chest, gently poking my shoulder with his beak. "Come on," he said. "They're waiting for you." He jumped off as I sat up. I could finally see everything around me. There was a muted light all around from torches and lamps. The pile of leaves where I was sitting was in a hollow in front of a temple carved into the rock face. There were hollowed-out stalagmites and stalactites that made gentle chiming sounds. Carved channels of water led from the temple into wells below, over a ledge. It was fairly quiet except for the chiming, but I could hear the faint hum of voices nearby. "Aha, so it is true that the queen sent you to us." I turned my head toward the voice and saw a man about 2 feet tall, with a crown of gold roots, silver mushrooms, and precious gems. I knew from what I had read in the mundane world that this was Gob, king of the gnomes. I scrambled out of the pile of leaves, moved towards the king and the other gnomes waiting, and kneeled before him. "Thank you, King Gob, for allowing me to enter your kingdom." "Oho, so you know who I am, smart girl. I welcome you to the northern city. Have you the key the queen gave you?" I nodded and offered him the black key that I had been clutching in my hand the whole time. The king smiled. "No, you need not give it to me. You will know when to use it. I'm sure the priests at the temple will help you find what you are looking for. I just needed to see it as proof that it was she who sent you. Good luck on your quest." He then gave an order in the gnome language, and his entourage turned and left. 2 gnomes stayed behind. The first was an old gnome in a robe, the color of rich, fertile soil. The second was a younger gnome in a similar robe, but it was a lighter brown. The older gnome had a gold chain around their neck with a large gold alchemical symbol for earth, a downward-pointing triangle with a line through it. I blinked, surprised, and the older gnome laughed. "Surprised that we'd use one of the mortal symbols?" I said. "Yes, actually. I thought you'd have some ancient gnome symbology." The gnome laughed again. "Where do you think the mortals got it from?" I opened my mouth once, closed it, and after seeing the mirth in the older gnome's face, I began to laugh myself. Crow cawed in laughter too, and I finally saw that he was sitting on the old gnome's shoulder. "Crow, are you okay?" He cocked his head. "Oh, yes. This old lady gnome and the other one kept you from crashing bad. They told me there is plenty of room for me to fly and things to look at while you talk to them. Not right that there's no sky, though." "Well, I suppose for you, no sky is definitely a bad thing, being a bird and all." Crow caught another laugh. "Since your crow here has spilled the beans somewhat, I suppose that we should do all the introductions. I'm Glynn, the high priest of the gnomes, and this is my student Hob." The older gnome gestured toward the younger. "Hob will be going with you through the caves, as he is now ready for this initiation. You have the key of the queen, so this allows you to enter the caves for your own initiation. Unfortunately, your crow friend can't come with you, as I fear it would be hard on him to go that deep into the earth. But he can come and go through the city as he pleases, or stay with me as I watch the caves for your return." "But he has been with me through all this journey so far." I felt a bit of panic, as I hadn't truly been alone since the beginning. "Some things you have to experience on your own. Being a priest, you should know that already." "A priest? No, I mean, I'm just a writer." The old gnome laughed. "Oh, come now. You have always been more than just a writer. You wouldn't have made it this far if your spirit wasn't strong and you had the skills to cope with being initiated." "Not a priest." "Ha! You don't think you're a priest now. I suppose you need the initiation as much as Hob here." Hob blushed. "Just a gnome. Just a writer. Ha!" I took a deep breath. So did Hob. It was true what the old gnome said. I knew it in my heart, but... "Will you be okay staying out here, Crow?" I asked, to avoid arguing with Glynn. Crow bobbed his head a few times. "I will miss you when you are gone, but it is as the old lady gnome said. It would hurt me to go further down in the earth." He flew from the old gnome's shoulder and landed on mine. I gave him some scratches on his head. Don't worry, my friend, I will find you when you come back. Promise to come back? He asked. I promise. Crow Cod poked my shoulder, then flew into the city proper. So, my young friend, are you ready? Yes, I replied, with trepidation. Glenn and Hob turned towards the temple opening, and I followed them. As we crossed the threshold, there was a sense of weight to the air, and the rest of the cave seemed to melt away. Doubts about the journey and myself started to bubble up in my mind. Why was I here? I must be crazy to agree with this. Do I really deserve this? What if I make a mistake? My mind was running in circles. Then we came to the great hall. The passageway led to a massive hall that was carved directly into the stone of the caves. There were statues of gnomes around the edge. Some were kings, some were dressed as Glynn, and all the statues had precious jewels encrusted in the stone. In the center of the room was a large octagonal altar with jet, citrine, carnelian, and jade. In the center of the altar was a depression where a small silver bowl lay, lit with a flame. It was so beautiful it made me stop and stare. I was brought back to the present with a small laugh from Glynn. Sorry, it was just so beautiful, and... I said. No need to apologize. The Great Hall can be overwhelming the first time you see it. Hob here spent his first few days as a novice coming in each day to admire the artwork. Hob grimaced and blushed again. I gave him a sympathetic smile. And while I'd love to indulge you in exploring the hall, we do have to be getting on. I nodded and followed the two gnomes through a door on one side of the hall. We emerged into a smaller room where some other priests were waiting with robes and other equipment. There were two sets, and they were gnome-sized, not human-sized. Hob set to dressing, but I was unsure what to do. Yes, asked Glynn. My robe is gnome-sized, and I'm not, I said sheepishly. Glynn laughed. Forgive me my forgetfulness. Do you still have your key? I nodded. Ah, good. Hold the key to your heart. I did so, and Glynn stood on a chair in order to put her hand on my head. She started chanting something in the gnome language, and suddenly the key disappeared in a flash of bright golden light. When the light cleared, I realized I was looking Glynn from below her, perched on the chair. My body felt different too, stockier and shorter, and a bit more muscular. Glynn nodded approvingly. This should last through your trip into the caves. I nodded, then changed into the robes. They were white with a white rope to tie out the waist. There was also a canteen filled with water that I was able to sling across my chest. Hob, who had already changed, was drinking a cup of some sort of liquid. One of the other priests handed me an identical cup. You'll be going down quite a way into the earth itself, and this potion will help you survive it. Just breathe, Glynn explained. I took a drink. It smelled and tasted of earth, mushrooms, and stone. I drank it down and started to feel different. Come then, to the caves, Glynn said, and led us through another door. There were other priests there chanting in the gnome tongue in front of a dark cave mouth. Hob was in front of me, swaying slightly, as we walked through the middle of the other priests. It seemed to take no time, and a long time, to get to the cave entrance. A priest held me back briefly while Glynn took Hob to the mouth of the cave. She said something to him, and then he walked forward into the darkness. Glynn then motioned me forward. I stepped carefully forward as I was unsteady on my feet. Glynn took my face in her hands. You are stronger than you know. You must go in alone and endure. But we will be here when you come back. Remember your promise to Crow. I nodded. The old woman nodded back and gently pushed me into the cave mouth. Darkness. My eyes were open, but I saw nothing but blackness. I could feel the floor and the walls and was unable to see anything around me. There was also silence. Complete silence. I turned in a circle, but couldn't see the cave entrance anymore. The absence of light and sound was disturbing. I'd never been in such darkness. It felt stifling. I remember what the elder priest had told me and took a deep breath. I took a moment to just breathe in and out. All I could hear was my breath and my heartbeat. After some time, or maybe it was the full effect of the potion, I started to hear faint sounds of chimes and water in the distance. My eyes adjusted fully to the darkness, finally, and I could see a faint phosphor outlines of the cave path. It was enough to ease the sense of closeness, but not enough to see completely. I took one more deep breath and then continued walking. I wondered why I couldn't hear Hob ahead of me, but I also didn't know how long it had been since we had entered the caves. I continued to walk as the path started to slope downwards. After what seemed like an immeasurable distance, the water noises became louder, mostly drips like rain. I could smell the water, too. Not the fresh smell of rain, but the smell of minerals. I took a few more steps, and when I reached my hands out to the side, I could feel nothing. Instead of rock, there was now sand beneath my feet. The feeling of the cave became bigger, and I could hear the dripping more clearly. I walked further in, and suddenly my feet touched water. As soon as my feet touched the water, a blue flame erupted before me. I put my hands up to shield my eyes from the brightness. I blinked as my eyes watered, and when they finally adjusted, the flame had turned into a fairy with blue flames for wings. By the creature's light, I could see that I was on a beach of an underground lake, and that the path from above ended here.
"You? You do not smell of gnome, yet you look like one. What are you?"
"I'm a human, but I have been sent by Akate and the priest Glynn to learn the knowledge of the gnomes in the northern city."
"Oho, so the great queen sent you, did she? Did she also give you payment for me? Knowledge is not free, you know."
"I'm sorry, but all she gave me were some keys, and the black one was used so I could become gnome-sized. The others are kept with the gnomes. I have nothing else except this canteen of water." The fairy pouted. "Well, the gnomes will see to it that I get my wages for this. But for now, I'll take that canteen of yours."
"But you won't need water here," they said.
I looked at them. I didn't trust the fae generally, but I had a feeling that something was going to happen with this one no matter what I decided about the canteen. I lifted the canteen from my shoulder, opened it, and instead of water I realized it was more of the potion. I took a long swallow, closed it, and handed the rest to the fairy. The blue fae snatched the canteen from me, opened it up, and sniffed it.
"Ah, the old woman's tea! Lovely! I know just what to do with you!"
Then before I could say anything else, the fairy grabbed me and held me to their chest. We started spinning and, surrounded by blue flame, plunged into the lake. The water surrounded us, but to my surprise, I could still breathe. The fae laughed as we went deeper and deeper under the lake and into the earth. It became warmer, too. It was so warm that I thought my skin would start to burn, but it seemed that the potion, or whatever magic the fairy had, kept me from catching on fire. Suddenly there was a rush of air, and the blue fairy and I emerged into a large cave that had a dull red light and the sound of a large waterfall. The fairy dropped me on the ledge and flew further into the chamber.
"Dragon!" shouted the fairy.
I scrambled to my feet. The air was hot and smelled of sulfur. The cave was even bigger than the temple above. I had been dropped on the ledge next to the waterfall about midway up the walls of the cavern. Below were geysers that glowed a dull red and emitted steam. They gave enough light for me to see that there was also a large pile of rocks and stones at the bottom. It was beautiful, as many of the rocks were actually enormous precious and semi-precious stones. I stared in fascination.
"Dragon!" shouted the fairy again. "Wake up, you old thing. There's another one for you."
Suddenly what I thought were rocks below me started to move. The cave rumbled and shook, knocking me to my knees. Slowly, a face and body emerged from the depths and loomed above me. It turned its head and then brought its face down to look at me. I stared back.
It rumbled. "I can see that, little one. And a human, too. Well, bug, what do you want of me?"
"Well, I was sent here to gain the knowledge of Earth and the Northern City by Hecate. The gnome sent me into the cave, so apparently I'm meant to learn from you since I ended up here."
The dragon made a noise that was more like a small earthquake and a laugh at the same time. So you shall, bug, so you shall. But tell me, what knowledge do you have of how the earth came to be?"
"Well, I have the story that the crows gave me," and I told him the story as I remembered it. "I am gathering the stories of the cities and the great tree so that others can find and gain their knowledge. I think I was meant to find you and share your story as well."
The dragon nodded. Yes, yes."
The dragon reached down into its hoard and carefully dug out a small stone, small for a dragon anyway, and threw it at my feet.
"Here, hold on to this stone while I tell you this story. It will help you remember it later when you go to write it down."
I picked up the baseball-sized stone and realized it was a huge diamond.
It reflected the dull red light around me. Now, look into the stone. I concentrated on the stone, and instead of the cave, I was seeing everything the dragon was telling me. Your crows have short memories, but stones have much longer and deeper memories. We record in them all that has been and all that will be. Time is not linear except for you mortals, so I will do my best to teach you. So, in the beginning, the one who brought light, who created us, gave us short memories just like you. There were many of us dragons then. We roamed the surface of the earth as you do now. But we were driven into hiding when the meteors came. Soon there were only a few of us that lived near the center of the earth. The one who brought light took pity on us, saying, Oh, my beautiful dragons, I did not know that those rocks would harm you so. There are things that even I can't control. Will you ever forgive me? We did, because how could we stay angry with the one who created us? But we did want one thing, since just counting our horror day after day was becoming boring. We wanted a purpose. The one who brought light agreed. You will be the lore keepers of the earth. You will store all the knowledge of the universe and share the knowledge to those who come to you for it. And so it was that we dragons could remember the first stirrings of the molecules that created the universe and the history of all that has been and ever will be. For those of us who live in the earth, the stones are our libraries, and we deposit our thoughts and stories into them. When you hold a stone, you can ask it to give you the stories of wherever you are. That is why I gave you this stone. It carries some of the oldest stories. Go ahead, ask it. I looked into the stone and asked it silently to show me how the earth came to be. Suddenly I was a particle writhing around with other particles in the darkness of space. I spun and spun and spun until there was a great flash of light. Now I was part of a molecule that was becoming attached to something bigger. There was a light forming and the coming together of other types of molecules. Then, in what seemed a moment out of time, I was the stone in my hand, witnessing the history of the planet the humans call Earth. I pulled back then, as I realized I was forgetting how to breathe. The dragon rumbled a laugh again. It's hard being a stone, isn't it? I took a deep breath. Yes, yes it is. The dragon nodded. Remember, you can always connect with the earth through the stones. You are made of the same types of particles and molecules as they are. I nodded slowly and realized I was starting to feel the heat more. I think it is time for you to go before the potion wears off. It's easy to lose time here. It looked around the cavern. Fairy, where have you gone, you blue demon? A blue light appeared next to me on the ledge. Are you done yet? The fairy answered. My wings are starting to get a little crispy. Yes, yes, you menace, the dragon said. Now take your payment and bring this child back to where she belongs. There was another rumbling, and suddenly a small pile of jewels tumbled onto the ledge. The fairy let out a squeal of delight, spun around the jewels, which promptly disappeared. Right then, off we go! And before I could even say goodbye to the dragon, the fairy grabbed me and started spinning again. This time it was so fast I passed out to the sound of the fairy laughter. I awoke to something poking at my shoulder. Hey, wake up, wake up, wake up! I heard as if from a distance. I felt like I was rising up from a deep cavern, and very slowly I came back into awareness. I opened my eyes and saw that I was lying on the floor of the great hall of the temple. There was something poking at my shoulder, and I said to whoever it was, Hey, stop that! I heard a short caw, and the crow said, Oh, thank goodness, I thought you'd never wake up! Another voice answered, Silly crow, it's hard to be a stone. Humans have a harder time than others when they seek these mysteries. She's come back right on time. I recognized the voice as Glynn's. You should sit up now. I did as I was told. To my surprise, I was back in my human form with my usual clothes. Glynn gave me my bag and asked me to hold out my hand. She put a golden symbol of Earth into it, a twin to the one she wore around her neck. So, priest, I hope you have learned the lessons of Earth well. Remember that all of the elements are connected, and that their history is written into the stones. I will, I said, looking at the symbol of Earth in wonder. Then I remembered that Hob had gone before me. Hob, did he make it? Oh, yes, he came back before you and is now resting. But for you, it is time to go. You have been here long enough. How do I get back up through the Earth? I said. Hecate never really gave me any instructions about that. The old woman smiled. What did you do last time? I followed the pull of the black key. She arched her eyebrows. As I reached into my bag to look for the keys, I noticed that there was a baseball-sized diamond in my bag. I pulled it out and showed it to Glynn. "It's the stone the dragon gave me." The old woman widened her eyes. "Ah, that's what it was. You came back with it, so I put it in your bag for safekeeping. What an amazing gift. He must have liked you."
"I suppose so."
I put it back in my bag and retrieved the three remaining keys. Crow came to sit on my shoulder. "Which one do we take this time?" he asked.
"I don't know."
But as soon as I said the words, the red key began to vibrate.
"Well," Glynn said, "looks like you have a direction."
I nodded, then knelt and gave the old woman a hug.
"Thank you."
She smiled. "Oh, off with you now," she said, and walked back into the temple. I took hold of the red key, and suddenly Crow and I were enveloped in a bright red fire.
The Southern City. The world became nothing but fire. It roared and flowed around us, spinning Crow and me around and around until we no longer knew what direction we were in. Crow was digging his claws into my shoulder, so I grabbed him and held him to my chest, closing my eyes to the brightness. It could have at least given us a warning, I thought, knowing that this world didn't work that way. It had its own rules. As abruptly as we were taken up by the fire, it stopped. The sudden quiet rang like a gong in my ears. After my senses righted themselves, I realized we had fallen over and were lying on the ground. Crow squirmed beneath me, so I rolled over and let him go, finally opening my eyes. He hopped a bit away to stretch out his wings and settle himself. Some ways I wished I could do the same, but all I could do was carefully sit up and look around. First it was hard to see after the darkness of the northern city, but once my eyes adjusted, I could see we were in a desert. There were small plants, cacti, and rocks everywhere, and the rocks were a dark red-orange. It was beautiful in a stark way, but it was also hot. I looked through my bag for water and realized I only had pens, notebooks, and the diamond that the dragon had given to me.
"Well, little human, you are in my realm now."
I turned around and there was a column of flame, bright red and orange. The fire let off no smoke. I knew it was hot. It did not burn. The flame was so amazing and beautiful I could not speak for a moment.
"Who are you?" I finally asked.
Laughter, both comforting and intimidating, ran through my head. The fire began to glow brighter and then shrink into a more human-like form. The person that emerged from the fire was the most beautiful being I had ever seen. They had long hair that was simultaneously as dark as night and bright as fire. They wore no shirt and loose, light-colored pants, belted with what looked like a frozen fire. They had breasts, but otherwise looked androgynous. All I could do was stare. They smiled, and I instinctively shivered. The smile did not reach their eyes. I lowered my own eyes. "I am Lilith, and you have reached the outskirts of my city in the south. I am not the only keeper here, but I am the one that you personally know more than the others. You should leave, little human. My realm is not for you." I felt compelled to go, but then I remembered the key in my hand and held it up for them to see. "I came to learn the knowledge of the south. Hecate sent me here." They looked at the key in my hand.
"So she has."
I felt something running up my leg to my arm. It was a bright red salamander. I was so surprised that I nearly dropped the key, but the little creature was quick. It grabbed the key in its mouth, hopped down, and scurried to its master.
"She has also paid your forfeit, I see. Well then, little human, come with me. Your crow can come too, but tell him to be quiet."
They began walking further into the desert.
"Well, Crow, you heard them."
Crow looked at me with concern, but hopped up on my shoulder. He gave me a light jab with his beak.
"They scare me," he said in a whisper.
I reached up and gave him a pet as we followed Lilith. "Honestly, Crow, they scare me too." We followed Lilith for a very long time. Where they walked the desert floor with ease, the heat and uneven ground started to exhaust me. I slowed, occasionally stumbling on a rock or a bit of bone. Even Crow started to droop, especially given his black feathers. He would fly around a little, but mostly stayed close to me. After a while, I fell to my knees. I had to rest.
"Can you not keep up, human?" said Lilith,
who was now standing before me.
"I need to rest," I replied.
"Pathetic. Weak." They shook their head and continued on.
"I am not," I defiantly thought.
I shook my head to clear it, struggled upright, and followed after Lilith. The crow gave a quiet, pitiful caw and followed me. As I walked, a slow litany began in my head. I am not weak. I am not pathetic. I'm here, aren't I? I came to the crossroads, befriended Crow, talked to Hecate, and survived the initiation of the gnomes. I'm also mortal and live in the human world. It takes a lot to survive there. They can kiss my ass if they think I'm weak. The further I walked, the angrier I got. How dare they? Crow stopped coming down to land on me, and I didn't notice. My anger at everything was turning into rage as we walked on. I was so wrapped up in my own anger that I didn't notice we were approaching tall cliffs that towered over us, creating relief from the heat of the sun. It was only when I shivered from the sudden drop in temperature that I looked up. Lilith had stopped in front of the cliff and was waiting for me to catch up. Lilith regarded me with a mischievous grin. Are you angry yet, little human? I'm surprised your weak, pathetic self actually let you follow me. I am not weak, I said angrily, as I was catching my breath. Oh, really? They drawled. Well, let's find out, shall we? She turned toward the cliff face, raised her hands, and shot fire that looked like waves of salamanders at the stone. The rock melted and reformed into a large black rectangle that was framed by faceted stones. The fire subsided, and I could see a dark black obsidian mirror framed by rubies and garnets. In the mirror, I could see myself as I was, tired, thirsty, and angry. Lilith touched the frame, and suddenly it wasn't my reflection, but an image of my childhood, me in junior high, where I bullied another person. The anger in me transformed into guilt. You were a nasty little child, weren't you? They touched the mirror again. This time it showed me writing angrily in my journal. My anger came back, but the guilt was starting to feel bigger. Then the image changed again to me not acting while others were having an argument. Then it was an image of me not giving money to charity. Now I was full of anger at someone who didn't deserve it. Now I was disappointed that I didn't get an award and someone else did. Now I was ignoring the news, ignoring the suffering, dreaming of someone's death in evil ways, cursing, laughing, retreating, running, feeling helpless. Stop, I yelled, and began to sob as I fell to the ground. I could feel Lilith towering over my cowering form. Do you really want to know what we know in this city, little human? You are no prophet. Do you really think you can lead the masses without breaking? Do you really think that you know the true way? They grabbed me by the head so that I could look into their fire gold eyes. Do you? No, I whispered. I don't. No, you don't, they mocked. And why is that, I started to whisper. Then I looked into their eyes again and said, stronger this time, I don't know. They let go of me and I fell to the ground. They sat on the ground near me, waiting. I was adrift. I was alone. I knew nothing. I was nothing. I was despair. I curled into a ball, weeping, while Lilith just waited. The sun began to set, and the light turned golden. Come here, child, they said, patting their lap. I crawled over to them, putting my head in their lap. They patted my head and let me weep. Crow, who had flown away when Lilith created the mirror, came over and landed on my leg. It's okay, little Crow. I'm done tormenting your human. Crow cocked his head, and his look said that he was unsure. Lilith laughed. Come back, little one. You are not alone, and you are not nothing. You have Crow here, and I'm here. You do not need to hide from us. The comfort in their voice was something I wasn't sure I trusted. But I could feel Crow standing on me, and I did trust him. I opened my sore eyes and could see that the desert was turning from red to purple. The sun had faded behind the cliffs, and the stars were coming out overhead. You understand now, yes? There are not that many that come to the southern city, and I would not let you into the city anyway. It is here for those who are prophets, those who become the ones who change the worlds. When they finally come here, they are able to rest. Unlike you, they don't crumble before the mirror, because they understand that they are the mirror. But unlike you, they lack the ability to act. They have no choice in who they are. You do. Do you understand? I think so, I said. At least a little bit. I could feel their smile. That is a start. You don't have to know how to be a prophet, but you should have an understanding of what it's like for those who are. I nodded. Lilith stopped petting my head and helped me to sit up. I felt clean and empty, even though I was sweaty and dirty. Crow jumped into my lap, and I scratched his head to reassure him that I was okay. Lilith raised their hand, and a salamander appeared. They whispered to it, and the salamander ran over to the obsidian mirror, where several other salamanders joined it. They swirled into a vortex at the bottom of the large mirror, and a small circle of obsidian popped out. The salamanders then carried it to Lilith. "Take this, not only as a reminder of what you learned here, but as a tool to see the truth in all things. You may not always like what you see, but it will always be true." They handed me the piece of obsidian. I took it in my hands and gasped. It was light, slightly bowl-shaped, and the lip of the bowl was encrusted with rubies and garnets in the shape of roses. "It's beautiful." Lilith stood. "Anger and truth are as beautiful as they are lethal. Never forget that." The salamanders gathered around them, and then suddenly they became, once again, a pillar of flame. The pillar flared for a moment, lighting up the night, then disappeared. I carefully put the mirror in my bag. Once my eyes adjusted to the dark, I took a deep breath. Crow poked at me from my lap. "Can we rest here for the night?" "Yes, Crow, I think we should. It's been a long day." I laid down on the desert floor at the foot of the cliffs. Crow jumped onto me, tucked his feathers over his feet, and we both fell asleep looking at the stars. The Eastern City. We woke just as the sun was rising. The sleep had done both of us good, and I felt ready to face the next challenge. Crow hopped off me as I sat up. He danced around a bit, spreading his wings to shake off his sleepiness. I smiled as I watched him. Crow must have sensed that I was watching because he turned around, cawed, and cocked his head. "Where do we go now, big sister?" I was about to say that I didn't know when I realized that that was the first time he had called me big sister. I smiled. "I suppose once you've been through fire together, you've earned the right to be considered family." I cleared my throat. "Well, we have two more keys left. The black was for the city of the north, and the red for the city of the south." I pulled out the two remaining keys from my bag. One yellow and the other blue. The yellow one began to vibrate. "It looks like we're going to the city of the east next." "How do you know?" asked Crow. "Well, the yellow key is vibrating, and yellow is the color of the east." The crow danced in excitement. "I know the city of the east. I like to go there. It's a floating city in the sky." "Really?" "Yes," he said, then stopped dancing and cocked his head. "How are you supposed to get there, big sister? You don't have wings like I do." I looked at the vibrating key. "I'm guessing that the key will somehow let me get there like it did for the other two cities. You should probably come over here, little brother, just in case it transports us like it did last time." Crow came over and perched on my shoulder. I took hold of the yellow key and put the blue one back in my bag. The yellow key suddenly turned from metal to a yellow-white crystal that glowed. A yellow ribbon coiled out of the crystal key and around my arm, leaving a long tail that hooked through the key and tied itself around my hand. Before I could wonder what the ribbon was for, I started to rise off the ground. Startled, Crow launched himself off my shoulder and flew around me as I kept rising up into the sky. "Crow, help!" Crow flew around me a couple more times, then cawed triumphantly. "I know what to do, big sister. I can get us there." And without hesitation, he swooped around, grabbed the end of the ribbon in his beak, and we took off at the speed of Crow towards the east. Crow pulled me ever eastward, flying over the land of the south and past the other lands, until we could see tall mountains in the distance. They were snow-capped and ringed with clouds. The wind rushed through my hair and chilled my bones, but it wasn't bothering me much because the flight was so thrilling. It was amazing to see this world from Crow's point of view. The land itself was small, with dots of people and carpets of green. The sky was full of clouds that looked like fluffy, strangely shaped pillows. As we came closer to the mountains, other birds came to see the strange sight of a crow pulling a human. A jay flew next to Crow and said, "How now, Crow? Who is this you bring? You have a pet human?" Jay laughed, as jays do. Crow cocked his head towards the jay and shook the ribbon out of his mouth, grabbing it in his claws. "I'm bringing my big sister to the city of the east. She's my sister, not my pet," he cawed with annoyance. "So sorry, Crow," Jay said mockingly, but then quickly flew away. It seemed strange to me that the jay would fly off so suddenly, until a shadow passed over me and Crow. I looked up and saw the largest eagle I had ever seen. It was hard to see what he looked like as he was shading the sun. I was in awe. He peeled at us, then flew a bit ahead and said, "Follow me." Crow obeyed. The sun was just setting when we finally came to the tallest of the mountains, ringed with clouds. We dove through the mist and came out to the bright evening sunlight, glinting off crystal spires. The city seemed made of glass. We were approaching a ledge carved into the side of the mountain, where a tall figure was waiting for us. Crow pulled me down towards the ledge, which was easily wide enough for hundreds of people to stand on. When my feet touched the ledge, the yellow ribbon disappeared and my regular relationship to gravity was restored. Crow flew out of my way as I tried not to topple over. The figure I had seen from the air laughed and said in an otherworldly voice, "Gravity can be unkind sometimes, can it not?" I found my footing, stood up, and stared at the being that just spoke. They were androgynous, tall, and dressed in a robe of a pale yellow-white. The eagle landed next to them and was nearly as tall. "She is not the will for our city, master," said the eagle. "She should be sent on her way." "Now, now, my friend, she has traveled far and has just arrived. We will let her rest a while and listen to her story." The eagle dipped its head. "So, human, Crow has brought you here, and I see you have a key to our realm. Who sent you?"
"I was sent here by Hecate to learn the wisdom of the city of the East."
"Ah, yes, the old one. She would send one such as you on this quest. However, Eagle is correct. The wisdom of the East is not yours to carry. It is something you will never master, even if I tell you of it. Do you still wish to know?"
"I do," although I couldn't hide the slight edge of disappointment to my voice.
They looked into my eyes, as if weighing something, then said, "Come then, I, Raphael, will teach you what you need to know." They reached out their hand and I took it. They led me over to several benches where we could sit and talk. "Please sit, rest. In this city dwell those whose minds are as sharp as swords. They are able to make decisions when no one else will. They make the decisions that can mean the difference between life and death, or the death of hundreds versus the death of millions. Many are military-minded, like the eagle, but there are also healers and lawmakers and others." They thought for a moment. "You cannot classify them as good or bad, but as those who have the will to lead and command."
"But why am I not to carry this knowledge? I've led people and made decisions when no one else would."
"Yes, but you have to be pushed into the decisions, and some of those decisions completely devastate you afterwards." I knew Raphael was right, even though I was annoyed at the idea that there was knowledge I couldn't have. They looked at me thoughtfully, touched my hand, and said, "You have enough of the knowledge of air to do what you must, or else you would not be here. It is not a failure that you cannot have full knowledge. Not everyone is good at all things. This is why you have others in your life who can do these things. You complement each other in knowledge, experience, and talent. No knowledge is ever wasted." We sat together for a moment, looking out over the clouds that were below. It was hard to let go of the idea that I should be able to know everything, but Raphael was telling the truth. Just like I couldn't know all about the City of the South and of Fire, so too could I not fully understand the City of the East and out of Air. Even so, I could still use what I know of the East to guide someone here to learn, or bring someone else who has this knowledge to teach them. I could use what I know of Air to do what needs doing. They were right. No knowledge is ever wasted. Raphael smiled at me and held out their hand. "Give me the key." I gave it to them, and they held it between their hands. A light glowed, and the key elongated into a small dagger made out of the same yellow-white crystal as the city. They whistled, and a smaller eagle appeared. "Take this to the leather workers and tell them to find a sheath for it," he instructed it, and the eagle took the dagger and flew into the city. Then Raphael turned to me and said, "Now I will give you another gift." They rose, stood in front of me, and put their hands on my head. A soft white light enveloped my body and mind. When the light receded, I was still on the bench that I had been sitting on, but Raphael was gone. In their place was the dagger in a black leather sheath that had faceted crystals on it of the same stone as the dagger. It also had a simple leather belt with it. I held the beautiful work in my hands for a moment, appreciating the craftsmanship, and then I belted it around my waist. It was then that I noticed that I felt more peaceful than I had felt after visiting the other cities. The places that were weighed down with Earth's history or broken open by fire felt less raw. They weren't gone, but the sharpness of the experiences were smoothed over. My eyes teared up. Raphael had given me healing along with knowledge. I looked out over the mountains and smiled. Familiar call sounded above me. Crow came down from out of the sky and landed on the bench in front of me. "Did you learn a lot, big sister? I got to fly with the eagles and found food. They are as big as her, but not as pretty." "I did, little brother, and I have a new gift, too." I showed Crow the dagger that Raphael had given me. "Wow, what a beautiful shiny. That will be a pretty addition to your nest." I laughed. "It certainly will." I thought for a moment, and a knowledge that I didn't know came to me. It was as if something had unlocked in my brain. "Crow, when we go to the City of the West, there will be a point where you won't be able to come with me. Will you look after all of my shinies while I'm gone?" He cocked his head. "Why can't I come with you?" "Because it will be underwater and you'd drown." He danced in place a bit. "Oh, okay. I will watch your shinies for you then." "Thank you, Crow. I know you'll guard them well." He preened himself a bit and cawed. "Proud creature." I dug the blue key out of my bag, which was already vibrating. "Are you ready?" I asked Crow. He cawed and flew to my shoulder. I reached up and pulled the crow to my chest and held the blue key in my hand. A spiral of water rushed around us and pulled us down as if we were falling down a waterfall. I had no fear. I was ready. You have been listening to Tales from Flat Space. If you want to support me and my writing, there are many ways to do it. Follow me on my Twitch channel, become a patron, share this podcast, or buy my books. All you have to do is go to revginapond.net and click on the relevant links. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll see you next time.